There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 107 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Friday Eve. Glad to have you here. Live local talk over the hour. You're a part of the show when you call, when you text 343-0106. You can also interact with us at facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 or Twitter, where I'm at FM Talk 106.5 on Twitter. So a lot of ways to get in touch with us, and I guess you can drop an email if you want to do it the old-fashioned way there. Let me suggest, though, when you stop by the website or anywhere else and you're trying to check out whether it's audio or show schedules or podcast, check out the details in the Ultimate Tailgate giveaway, because we just have a few more weeks of this, and somebody's going to win the grand prize of over $6,000 worth of tailgate gear, the TVs, the beverages, the golf carts, the jewelry, you go down the list here of all the great items for tailgating, or however you choose to use them. I mean, you can use your Adirondack chairs, you know? I mean, you can use those for just sitting there not watching TV after you win them from Old Time Feed, but I'd suggest you use them as part of a party there. And so go by and see the folks over at Bailey's, Carrot Patch, Fairhope Brewing, Old Time Feed, Cart Doctor, and once per day, drop your name in the registration box at each of those locations. And coming up next month, we're going to award over $6,000 in prizes to just one FM Talk 106.5 listener. So good luck. Details online now. All right, let's check in with our buddy Brendan Kirby with LifeSet.com, also the author of Wicked Mobile and Man Witch Fan. He just told me during the break, you are a fan of the Man Witch still.
Absolutely. Well, welcome back, by the way.
Oh, but thanks.
Yes, I love the... Now, we used to call them... And I never thought about this. I don't know if this was our politically correct term for it, but we used to call them Sloppy Joes.
Well, Sloppy
maybe
Joe...
Too. Maybe it should be Sloppy Josephine.
That's right. Know? But it should be just J-O, right? Because that could be masculine or feminine. Wasn't that Joe on Facts of Life had no E, just J-O? So it could be Sloppy Joe that way. But I think, you know, Manwich
and
is
Joe
a...
Bonner. Joe Bonner, so it can...
You, there you go. Either. So that's what I'm saying. So you probably could go there and protect yourself if saying Sloppy Joe. But Sloppy Joe is a general term. Manwich, well, it's a meal. But it's also a very, you know, brand name. And after they get done with this Kleenex man size, they're going to come after Manwich. Just mark my words. I got to get you into this conversation, because last hour we're talking about civility, lack of civility, my theories of why it's easy to just demagogue, you know, the other side versus talking about nuanced policy. And then your piece at LifeSet that says, and the political party of civility is the Democrats? And you're talking about a morning consult poll that right now shows the Democrats, right? These would be the same Democrats behind Bob's in Washington and, screaming at people at the, you know, and attacking the doors of the Supreme Court. They're the civil party.
Yeah, that's what voters seem to think. Or they were asked, how well does civility or civil, I guess, how would a civil describe? And then they asked the Democrats and the Republicans, and the voters, 49% said that describes the Democrats very or somewhat well. And for Republicans, they were split 43-43 between describes them well or doesn't describe them well. So it's like about a 6-point gap. Given the news, it's a little kind of head-scratching, because some prominent Democratic leaders have explicitly said they don't deserve civility. We can't have civility. You know, Hillary Clinton said we can't have civility until we win back power. Then we can have civility. So they're explicitly saying to be uncivil, and yet they're viewed civilly. Now, the only thing I could maybe think of is when people are asked this, you know, Democrats, I think it's not surprising that they would view themselves as civil and the Republicans as not. But independents, you know, also agreed by a lesser margin. And I think maybe people are thinking of Trump when they say Republicans, and Trump has certainly said a lot of uncivil things.
Well, he is uncivil, yeah, sure, sure.
So that maybe is what they're thinking. But, you know, I mean, we've seen this go to a whole new level. You know, I mean, I might just point out the most extreme example is when a Bernie Sanders supporter shot a baseball field filled with Republicans, you know, including shooting in the direction of anyway, Alabama's own Mo Brooks.
Yeah.
Steve Scalise almost died from that. But there have been lots of lesser incidents of people being shouted at, at restaurants, and people banging on the Supreme Court doors, and Democrats sort of egging it on. You know, Maxine Waters saying, you know, don't give them peace, and Cory Booker, Spartacus, saying, you know, get up in a congressperson's face, and, you know, people cornering poor Jeff Flake on an elevator. I mean, There's been a lot of this. It's not just one or two isolated.
Well, okay, but I point out last hour, if you're somebody's nodding right along with us right now and then think that this has never been an issue for anybody other than Democrats, then you're wrong. I mean, this is absolutely on both sides of the aisle. There have been these uncivil moments, and you can continue on to talk about President Trump. I mean, I think, you know, it's fire with fire right now. You look at what's being thrown, you know, over both sides here, and it's uncivil. It is interesting, though, that in today, if you took a snapshot of the last, you know, 3 weeks or 4 weeks, you know, like right before the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings to now, that it would seem like, at least in this snapshot, the Democrats would win the incivility contest.
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly point to incidents on both sides. And, you know, there are Democrats. I mean, I think, you know, prominent Democrats and Republicans both have gotten anonymous death threats and that sort of thing. You know, that's fairly routine. And, you know, as I said, I mean, Trump calls people terrible names. I mean, you know, he's the poster child for incivility. But I still think it's a false equivalency to say, well, both sides do it. They're both equally responsible. I can't recall incidents where Democratic members of Congress or cabinet officials or whatever were, you know, surrounded by a mob of people at a restaurant or something and shouted at, and so they had to leave. I just, maybe that's happened, but I can't think of an incident. And if it has happened, it certainly isn't happening to the frequency. And you don't have, you know, Republican members of Congress encouraging that. And, you know, I guess the analog here is the Tea Party. And a lot of people have said, well, this is just what the Tea Party did. You know, I mean, Tea Party people got unruly at, like, these town hall meetings the congressmen would have, and, you know, they would shout it at, you know, congressmen over Obamacare or the debt or whatever at town hall meetings. And, you know, I think I don't like that. I mean, I think that you should hear what you know, the politician has to say, and, you know, make your feelings known. But shouting people that I don't like that, having said that, it seems like a town hall meeting is a more appropriate venue for that kind of engagement than when someone's trying to eat dinner with his wife. And I don't ever remember the Tea Party doing that. I don't ever remember a Democratic member of Congress, you know, being confronted when he was in a public place that wasn't part of a political event.
Right, and I know this is just part of the Trump apology hour that that we've been criticized for, but we'll continue and point out that each time a new beachhead is established, my theory is that you can't go back again. You know, that I hope so. Like, my heart says, I hope so. My mind says, I don't know how, like, in 2 years that everything's, you know, better on this. All wounds are healed. I don't see it. I see it getting worse. Unfortunately, I don't want it to get worse. I want it to be better, but I see it getting worse.
Yeah, I mean, in order for it to get better, there has to be an incentive. And I don't see where the incentive is right now to be civil. If the midterm election were to contain very surprising results, and, you know, Republicans pick up seats in the House instead of, you know, losing them like everyone thinks so, you know, maybe you know, Democrats and progressive activists would think, you know, maybe we went too far here. You know, maybe we scared a lot of, you know, moderate people with, you know, scenes of shouting at people in restaurants, and that's not the best way to win. You know, I'm not convinced that would be the reaction, but I think it might be. But if the Democrats win, you know, we'll send the message that that works, and it will incentivize Republicans to say, you know, we're going to fight fire with fire. We're going to shout at people at restaurants too. And I wouldn't like that any more. Than I'd like to see, you know, Jeff Sessions or Kirstjen Nielsen rather being shouted at a restaurant or Ted Cruz. I mean, I don't really care who the office owner is. I just don't think that's healthy.
There you go. Coming right back, more with Brendan Kirby from LifeSet.com, author of Wicked Mobile. And you've heard about the caravan, right? The story up right now. Why Trump's threat to cut foreign aid might not stop this caravan moving from Central America north. He gives us details next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. The digits 343-0106, which works on that Sports Illustrated football phone you got. Also, text, same number, no charges other than whatever your carrier's got going. But that's between you and them. I'm not going to get in y'all's business. Tell you this, we continue our conversation with Brendan Kirby from LifeSet.com, also author of Wicked Mobile. If you want to do a little early Christmas shopping or have this in for something very scary to read on Halloween, he's got a copy waiting for you a couple different places. Where do they go?
Yeah, I mean, you can go to bookstores locally, pick it up. You can buy it. You can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it on other online sellers. You can check us out, too, on Wicked Mobile on Facebook and like the page. That's helpful as well.
You know, okay, I want to see something. I want to talk about this caravan thing, but this text right here. So Mike texted in. Like Mike said, hey, Sean, have you seen that Saban is promoting a Democratic senator? So the Democrat that is Joe Manchin, who actually was a Democrat voting for confirmation of Kavanaugh. He is in one of the state even. And correct me if I'm wrong, but voted in even a higher number than Alabama for Trump. He's in West Virginia. He's a Democrat, but he's also a Second Amendment Democrat. He may be one of the last, but he's in West Virginia. And let me point out that Nick Saban and Joe Manchin were childhood buddies. So, because somebody's saying, is this a tell on his politics? I don't know. I think Nick Saban would probably be more worried about who his buddy was from when he was a kid than politics. But there you go. Saban now.
Yeah, Nick Saban has always struck me as being pretty apolitical.
Yes.
And I think people have tried to drag him into politics, and he's, you know, shot that down. I mean, he's so laser focused.
Yeah, he does not care about anything. Football
games.
That's right. He does not care about
it. You know, I think like Nick Saban in his life is, you know, winning football games is like one, and then his family is second, and then I don't think that really anything else comes to third.
Winning football games again.
He coached in West Virginia too.
Yeah,
and he's from there. I didn't know that they were childhood friends. So yeah. even Jimmy Kimmel endorsed a Republican in Las Vegas for constable. You know, who's running in North Las Vegas because they were school buddies growing up in Las Vegas. So, I think that really doesn't say much about Saban's politics as much as it does, about his friendship. And frankly, what if he was? What if he got real political endorsed candidates in Alabama? Would that really make a difference? Because I just don't think endorsements really matter. And even a hardcore Alabama football fan is probably not going to, vote for whoever Nick Saban tells him to vote for, I would think.
I don't know, unless he says the only way we're going to have another good recruiting year at win football games is if this person's elected. All right, I want to, before we run out of time here, talk about the caravan. So a lot of people have been following this as this migrant caravan's headed north from Honduras and Guatemala through Mexico to the United States. And you talk about the threat that President... What is the threat that the President's rolled out here?
Well, the threat was, Trump said, look, you know, Guatemala, Honduras, stop this thing. If you don't break this caravan up and stop it, we'll cut off your aid. We give aid to all those countries. If you add up all the military aid civilian aid, it comes to, in 2017, Guatemala got $229.3 million, Honduras got $144 million, and El Salvador got $91.2 million. So that's a fairly significant amount. You're talking about a few hundred million dollars.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why I say that this is likely to fall on deaf ears is it is a pittance compared to what these countries get from so-called remittances, which are cash wired back home by immigrants living in the United States. This would be legal and illegally, and probably also, you know, some citizens, you know, maybe that still have relatives back there. But these countries are highly dependent on it. And just to give you an example, that same year we're talking about, Guatemala's share of remittances came to $8.2 billion. Honduras got $4.33 billion, and El Salvador got $5
billion. Wow.
And you know, so you're measuring this in billions versus millions. And just to put it in the perspective, that's 11.5% of Guatemala's gross domestic product. Comes from remittances.
How much?
For El Salvador,
11.5% of GDP?
So 11.5% of the total Guatemalan economy is based on money sent from the United States by relatives.
Wow.
In El Salvador, by the way, it's 18.3%, and Honduras, it's almost 20%. So almost
unbelievable.
A fifth of the entire economy of Honduras is cash remittances from the United States. So I'm just saying, if I'm a leader in one of these countries...
Right, it doesn't make sense.
Choose,
yeah.
Yeah, if I'm forced to choose between a few million dollars and a few, like, you know what, $200 million in economic aid from the United States that formally comes, or billions of dollars in remittances from immigrants, I'm going to give up the aid and say, you know, let's keep these immigration flows going because our economy is so dependent on it.
And you can, I mean, could take a win. This is interesting. You're as always, you go down the data mine and bring out the actual numbers, which I like. So you lay this. You it could have your cake and eat it too here as a politician from one of these three countries, right? I mean, you could do the old, even though you know that you're forced to make a choice, so your choice is going to be this one that is way more money coming into your country. But on a political front, you could tell the United States to stick it, right? Yeah, you could have a big win. Hey, I don't care what you say. Take it away.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I the smartest move, frankly, is to at least pretend to take the United States concern seriously.
But what would they do?
What
would they do? I mean,
well,
that's, you know, how would they stop it?
I mean, it's probably not much that Honduras could do. Because they loaded up a whole bunch of people to leave. You know, I don't think a country can stop people from leaving the country. You know, unless they want to turn themselves into a police state and build a Berlin Wall-style mm-hmm. structure to trap citizens in. So there's not much they can probably do. But Guatemala, you know, has to let them in. Now, they have an agreement among those countries. You know, an open border agreement allowing the free travel of people back and forth. But Guatemala could say, look, we're not going to let you traverse through our country, you know, in this kind of size thing. So they can make a show to break it up or take some sort of action or try to discourage it or do something that would, you know, appease the United States and say, look, we're taking this seriously. And then still just sort of look the other way when it comes to the run-of-the-mill illegal immigration that goes on. That's probably the smartest move, I would think, politically, because you keep your aid and you get the remittance flows.
Well, that part's right.
You want them both.
Well, that part's right, but at the same time, you know, all politics is local, or let's just say all politics is regional. And so if I'm looking at the politics down there in Central America, don't I want to seem to have this solidarity with my neighboring Central American country?
I guess, you know, I mean,
I'm not talking about what's right or wrong. I'm talking about what's politically expedient.
I mean, I guess it just depends on the political position and the individual politicians and whether they feel secure enough that, you know, that they can act in their financial interests as opposed to, you know, some sort of populist interest. I mean, I would just look to Mexico, where they've got a new incoming president, Lopez Obrador, who's sort of like the Trump of Mexico, only from the left. And he's a very kind of in-your-face kind of guy. He wrote a book last year called Listen Up Trump that took Trump to task for everything he said about Mexico. And he said on the campaign trail that he wasn't going to do the dirty work of the United States by rounding up immigrants from other countries and sending them back. So on paper, you would think, oh, my God, this guy's going to be a disaster for the United States when he takes office. But he's offered a lot of reassuring signs recently, including this week, saying, you know, when he's president, if Central American people are coming to Mexico, he's going to give them jobs and work visas and let them stay in Mexico. Now, it's hard to evaluate words, and we'll see mm-hmm. what the actions are. But if he's really serious about giving work permits and welcoming Hondurans and El Salvadorans into Mexico and not just kind of greasing the path so that they can get to the United States, I mean, that would be a big benefit to the United States. And the fact that he's saying that, after having won the election and not having to worry about another election for, I think, their six-year terms in Mexico, you know, means that, he seems to be interested in building a positive relationship with the United States because of trade and security and all the issues that, where we have shared interests.
There he is, Brendan Kirby, LiveSet.com, author of Wikimobile. People want to reach out to you online and hurl insults and epithets or maybe just be nice. How do they do it?
Yeah, at Brendan K. Kirby on Twitter. You can read the stuff on LiveSet.com.
All right, very good. And coming right back, more of Midday Mobile. Phone number, text line, 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. I'll turn these down for you so you grab those headphones. It's a dangerous thing when you walk into a radio studio and you grab headphones until I can adjust them, because all of us in this business, even young Dalton in there, have lost a degree of our hearing from loud headphones over time. So understand, not as much blood coming out of your ears now, Brian?
No, I'm good now, yeah.
All right, good. Just wanted to check that here, because it's time to talk about what's going on Dolphin Island this weekend. We mentioned it some this morning. We were talking about it, but in specifics, lucky for all the contestants that are in the Try the Gulf Triathlon, I can't sign up now.
That's correct.
I can't sign up. Y'all would be in trouble if I could sign up. But unfortunately, I was out of town. I didn't get back in time. So I'm not going to be in this year. So y'all have a chance now. But for the rest of us, we can go down and watch this at Dolphin Island. It's Try the Gulf, TRI, right?
TRI.
So tell me about Try the Gulf, and tell me about, like, from a spectator's perspective, what we're going to do.
Okay, so the Try the Gulf Triathlon, this is our third year.
Okay.
It's going to be going on, obviously, at Dolphin Island, starting at the Isle Dolphin Country Club. And for those, it is a great venue, and the people of Dolphin Island are extremely welcoming for both participants and for spectators. And we're going to have a fantastic event. So for those who have never seen a triathlon before, it starts off with a swim.
Mm-hmm.
It's a swim in the Gulf, in a protected part of the Gulf there. And then it's a 16-mile bike ride that goes from there and actually goes over the bridge and then back twice, which is one of the big draws.
Yeah.
Of the...
Well, not just the distance down. You got that elevation. You got that big climb.
Absolutely.
You got four of those on the bridge.
That's right. Up and down.
Oh, man.
And the wind is no joke up there, but it provides a beautiful view, obviously, and one of the landmarks of this area. And then after that, the racers then transition into a 5K, a 3.2-mile run that ends there at the country club on the golf course. It's really, really nice.
Okay, so help me out here as we're talking about this, is because we think about spectator sports. You know, we all know our spectator sports around here, but we don't think about triathlon as a spectator sport.
Right.
I mean, a lot of people may say, I've heard of this, I would like to come see it and
sure.
watch what it looks like, whether I want to participate one day or just to see it. But where do you go? Like, is there a place to stand? Where would you have us be to watch this? Or would we be spread out all over the island? How does it work?
So probably the most action would happen at the Isle Dauphin Country Club.
Okay. Right.
That's where the transition area is. And so when people get out of the water and go to the bike and then get off the bike and go to the run, they're going to be coming in and out of that area.
Okay.
Right there at the parking lot there at the grill. But, you know, anywhere on the course, and it's easy to see the course, is the bike course in particular is going to go all over the island.
Okay.
Some to the eastern end, and then almost down to the fort, and then towards the western end to make up the 16 miles in addition to the bridge. And so you can stand anywhere right there
okay.
on the main road there.
You pick your spot, basically.
Yeah, and you can watch it. And it is an amazing, you know, I didn't think about it until we started the triathlon.
Right.
But it really is a spectator sport, or it can be. It's a lot of fun to do them, so I've been told. I've yet to do one. I've been putting it on for 3 years.
Hey, lucky for all of y'all, they've closed. closed. Yeah, they've closed registration.
That's right. So, that's right.
It'll be next year.
It is a really neat thing to see because there are some incredible athletes out there, and that's the beauty of the triathlon is you get different disciplines and people who excel in all three at the same time is really incredible.
Yeah, and it's, watch how people play the game. You might have somebody who's fantastic on the bike, but maybe not so strong in the swim, but their run is okay. So they get, you have the people that are just kind of mid-pack for all three events. That's a way to do it. Or they're like a bright shining star in this one, not as good in other. You work with what your benefit is, and try to make up that time with whatever discipline's your number one.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is considered a sprint triathlon, so it's the shortest distance. But they go all the way up to the Ironman, like the one that just happened out in Hawaii.
Yeah, that one's long as can be.
It's a really, really long race. I forget, the swim is multiple miles. I forget how many miles, but then it's over 100-mile bike ride, and then it's a full marathon at the conclusion. And
I mean, that's unreal, because most people at the end of a marathon would collapse.
Right. At any of these three things would collapse.
But they're doing three of them.
Absolutely, together.
Wow. Okay, so try the golf. Talk to us about, Sandra, what time, where do we need to be, when, those kind of things.
So the race actually starts at 7:30, but as anyone knows who's been down to Dolphin Island,
it is, but
out of necessity. As anyone knows who's been down there, though, one way in, one way out from the island, and that's on the bridge, and the bridge is going to shut down at about 6:30, and that's when we'll start putting out cones for the
racers.
So
you've got to be in, even though the race doesn't start till 7:30, you got to be in before.
Absolutely. You need to be down there before.
Okay.
And, the restaurant will be open there. We're going to have a big after party with award ceremony and all that sort of thing. But you would need to get down to the island early because once the bridge closes, you can still get to the island, but the Sheriff's Department and the Dolphin Island Police Department are going to be taking people a convoy one way and then a convoy the other way. And so if you don't make it, you'll be sitting for a while.
Okay, so get there before or... then is the bicycle, you said that was second or last?
Yes, second.
Second.
Right.
Okay. But, and then the run will be taking place all on the island?
Yes. So the run will go from the golf course through a neighborhood and then back on the golf course to conclude at the country club.
All right. What else do people need to know? Any concluders here, things people need to, before, and talk about who's putting this on and why y'all doing this?
Sure. So this is put on by the Mobile Bar Foundation. We're the charitable arm of the bar. And the Bar Foundation's goal is to provide financial assistance through grants to local nonprofits to benefit the community for volunteer lawyers, for legal services, for things like in the past we've given money to Big Brothers and Big Sisters, things
great
like
group,
that.
Great group.
It's, it is. And so our sponsors make this happen. Infirmary Health is our title sponsor. We've got a bunch of great folks here. Fairhope Brewing is a sponsor. They're providing beer for the after party.
Good beer, too.
Absolutely. Great beer at Fairhope. Wenzel's and Whole Foods. And so this is our primary fundraiser for the Bar Foundation. I'm the president, and this is by far and away our biggest fundraiser for this organization. And with it, we're able to give away last year I think we gave away a little over $60,000.
Holy cow!
In grants to local nonprofits.
That's all staying right here.
That's all staying right here in the Mobile area.
That's important, and so people can come out and if this year they can watch it. And they can go ahead and get signed up early for next year?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly when the registration opens. It'll be shortly after this one's over.
Yeah, that's a good thing. You work off people's excitement of seeing it. And you know how it is. If something's way in the future, we'll agree to sign up to
Absolutely.
Do Oh, yeah, I can do that.
Sure.
I can do I'll train. I can do We'll sign up now, and say, oh, yeah, I'll be in shape. I'll be fine.
Yeah. And there'll be incentives. There'll be a cheaper rate usually is what happens if you sign up, early bird discount, that sort of thing.
See, this is how they get you. This is how Brian and the folks at the Bar Association get you in for next year.
That's right.
I see how this trap is set.
One last thing, if I may. We cut off at 300 this year. A lot of excitement for it. It's going to be a great event. We really hope you can come out. Next year, we hope for even more people to be able to accommodate it. The buzz is getting out, and it's a really good event, and encourage everybody to come out.
So, it's going to be more folks more folks next year in this. So
yes.
So there is room for me next year?
Yeah, Sean, if you want to go ahead. Matter of fact, I could make you one of the top five numbers in the race if you want to go ahead and commit now.
I see. I know better than that. I have to check my when we get out there, as soon as we close these microphones, I'll check my schedule and I'll probably be able to do it. I'll get back
to you. I'll wait on your call.
All right. Very good. 144 FM Talk 106.5. We'll put more information about that up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 150 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad you're here. Good to talk to my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. And that's some of what you're showing off. I was looking at some of the pictures you posted up just now on the Facebook page, like within the last hour. Even to my untrained eye, them some fancy pieces there, Angelo.
I'm telling you, you know, when you look at the bright, shiny, pretty stuff there, you sort of have to say, wow, even if I can't really see you wearing any of those pieces on, but I can certainly see you buying those pieces.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That's right. I'm definitely on the purchase side of it. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the neat things, too, and you've talked about it over time, that you can find pieces of jewelry at Mobile Bay Coins that your wife, girlfriend, whoever gets the jewelry, they're not going to see. It's not what everybody else is wearing. It's a unique item. It's beautiful, and it's one of a kind.
Well, exactly. And last week we had somebody that was looking for something for a friend, and they actually wanted a mourning locket, just something you wear, you know, if you're missing, you know, somebody that's passed on that was important in your life. And we had a very unusual, unique piece, one of a kind. I've never seen anything like it. And when he gave that to his, you know, his friend, she was completely blown away by it. And everybody that has seen her with it was equally impressed, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, and you can come in when I like to, because y'all, you don't have to know what you're talking about. Trust me, when you go in, you can just say, hey, Angelo, and then Angelo's going to, you know, point you to Anna or somebody who understands this, and you can say, I've seen her with this piece of jewelry, or she likes, you can give them one piece of information, and y'all are off to find us a bunch of stuff to look at. I like that. It's helpful.
It's sort of fun. You know, we've had people come in and say, well, here's a picture of my girlfriend on Facebook, and this is her favorite necklace. Do you have something that would go with it? And, you know, with a picture like that, we can start looking around. And with all the different items we have in inventory, we're probably going to get you hooked up.
All right. Do this. Give us directions to come see you, whether we're looking at this jewelry, talking precious metals, even open-ell knives, whatever gift ideas we're looking for, precious metals, how do we find you?
Yeah, we're in Midtown on Government Street. That's 2204 Government. Or you can always go onto Facebook and like and follow Mobile Bay Coins there. Because I got to tell you, I post those pictures, and one out of three of those items is already sold.
Holy cow. Okay, that's fast. All right, y'all get on there and check it out now and get those deals. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Angelo.
Have a good one, Sean.
All right, you too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. You know, sometimes I leave that end off there, and I shouldn't, because there's all kinds of jewelry items to check out, and you can do it right now. You can peruse from your computer, from your phone, from your laptop, from your Apple iWatch or something, whatever you have. I can do that right now. All right, a couple of odds and ends before we run out of time here. Dalton, did you see the new contract deal for the Westworld people? Now, so the Westworld, the HBO's Westworld, right? The hit show Westworld, based on the books. You know, there were books before there's miniseries, movie, whatever it is, series on HBO. So Westworld, according to the Hollywood Reporter, the cast of Westworld has had a big increase in salary. I'm going to give you what they're making now per episode. Well, okay, tell you what, let's go back and talk about what folks like Ed Harris, Evan Rachel Wood, Jeffrey Wright, Thandi Newton, I don't know. They were making between $100,000 to $150,000 per episode. Not per season, per episode. Okay? They were making between $100,000 and $150,000. But y'all, they got a raise. $250,000 an episode now in the third season is what at least the leads are getting in this. And I've watched, I think, one season. The kids and the family was out of town. I got to watch like a binge watch a week's worth, because it's like nothing I can have on with children in the house on so many levels. So I binge watched and got some Westworld viewed. And now I'm two seasons in.
Okay.
Or not completed. And this is, they said, for the third season, which I, wouldn't they have already shot that?
You would think they would be shooting it right now or have finished shooting the third season.
Right.
I think there's only been two seasons.
Right. So it says the third season, the leads will all get at least $250,000 an episode.
Oh, man. That's pretty good money.
So there's like how many episodes in a year?
I think between what, 8 to 12, somewhere around there.
Cha-ching.
Not bad.
Cha-ching.
That's kind of the HBO model, right? To they have a show and they pay decent wages. I mean,
yeah,
100,000. Was it 100,000 an episode?
Between 100,000 and 150,000 an episode
when
they started. Right, and now they've renegotiated to 250,000.
That's not bad. Game of Thrones, that's what I was looking up
right.
to see how they compared, because I would say that's the... Would you say Game of Thrones has surpassed Sopranos and The Wire as far as popularity while it's in its run?
I don't know for The Wire, and this is all going to be prejudicial because of what I like. I was a very big Sopranos fan.
Yes.
A very big Sopranos fan, which kind of... One of the things that ruined me to any other kind of TV... is the detail that was put in Sopranos. Mm-hmm. I have trouble watching like a network knockoff or something like that because I like that detail. It, not just the violence, the current, it's not that. It's the level of cinematography. It's the storytelling. But The Sopranos was huge, man.
Yeah.
And The Wire was big. And Game of Thrones, yeah. And I'm a big Game of Thrones fan. So, but would Westworld, I would rank Westworld kind of at the level of The Wire.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Game of Thrones and Soprano at
And a huge difference with Game of Thrones from Sopranos is Game of Thrones, I came into a little late, but mm-hmm. That's one of those where you could go back and stream.
Yeah, and get even more confused.
Sopranos, you had to watch, I think it was Sunday night that those aired.
Oh, of course it was.
You either had to have the VCR preset.
We didn't have it. Come on, it's not that long ago.
Yeah, so I think it was.
Was it? Okay.
I know my dad watched Sopranos, and I feel like I remember him recording it, but I know you had to be in front of the TV, at least for the first few seasons of Sopranos, if you wanted to watch the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Game of Thrones, I feel like most people did not start watching Game of Thrones when it began. Most people caught on, whether it was after the second, third, or fourth seasons, and it's the same with Westworld now.
Yeah, well, I was late to the party with Westworld. I have nothing against The Wire. I just have not had time to get into The Wire. And I'll have to say the on-demand feature lets me keep up with these shows because I had a little more liberty in my life to watch a show that was non-child friendly mm-hmm. on a Sunday evening. In my earlier days now, I don't have that kind of content on in the house when they're little ears and eyes out
yeah.
there. So I guess I think I picked up Game of Thrones in season one.
Okay.
I think
you were
I
ahead
did.
Of the game.
But you can go back and yeah, but like Westworld, I did not. So I went back and binge watched almost two seasons mm-hmm. worth.
Well, Game of Thrones, they're making more money, of course, than the actors for Westworld. The
I'm going to be in retirement before the season comes out. That final
seriously,
season.
Was it mid next year? April
yeah,
is
yeah.
when the final season. And each episode of the next season is going to cost $15 million per episode to make.
But to make as in salaries or just crew?
As
or?
In the budget for each episode
it's
coming up.
$15
million put into each. I mean, that's movie quality.
It is.
For each episode. But the biggest actors on there, Emilia Clarke, who plays mm-hmm. Daenerys Targaryen,
mm-hmm.
Kit Harington, who is Jon Snow, Cersei Lannister, Peter Dinklage, who plays Tyrion Lannister, and
such
then
a talented
the guy
actor.
That plays Jaime Lannister, they're each making $500,000 an episode.
Oh, so the Westworld people, while I'm cheering them for $250,000, mm-hmm. they're probably going, hey.
But Game of Thrones is the biggest show on TV, I would say.
Oh, yeah,
easily.
On cable, on
yeah.
premium television, absolutely.
Maybe right. not as big as the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, well, I guess you look at the ratings. Actually, the highest paid television star is, you know?
Judge Judy.
There you go. Very good. Judge Judy, she is the boss, for sure. All right, we're out of here. Feinbaum on the way next. Be back tomorrow morning. We'll do
yep.
a show.
I'm sure Feinbaum's about to lay out how the Tennessee Vols can beat the Alabama Crimson Tide this Saturday.
His alma mater. He probably is. He's all Tennessee all the time. That's it. All right, go have a great one. We'll be right here waiting for you online. FMTalk1065.com.